This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. As of now, the Wisconsin Government Accountability Board is still planning to hold a series of recall elections against Republican state senators on July 12th. But the Republican Party has been recruiting so-called spoiler candidates, Republicans who would run against the Democratic challengers, which would force a primary election and delay a general recall election, including the one in the 32nd District challenging Dan Capanke. Until this week, it was thought Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling would be Capanke's only challenger. I asked Jennifer for her reaction to the fact that she may soon be in a primary race.
I really think that we are seeing a new low in Wisconsin politics, that the Republicans are deliberately manipulating the election process here in Wisconsin, that by seeking out candidates, really phony candidates for these sham primaries across the state, I think it demonstrates how desperate the recalled senators are feeling right now, how desperate the party is feeling. They have, again and again used stall tactics with frivolous lawsuits that I really think that it's time that the senators should stand behind their record. They should face the voters in a timely and an honorable fashion. And I know that the Republicans are using the arguments that those senators have been tied up on the Finance Committee, dealing with the budget, that haven't been able to be home campaigning, and that is just poppycock. The fact is that I serve on the Finance Committee, and I have been able to juggle both. It has felt like I've got three full-time jobs between my responsibilities on the Finance Committee and then being back home and meeting voters throughout the 32nd Senate District and traveling evenings and weekends and getting out and about. But really, it's a waste of time. It is a waste of money. And I really think that the constituents and the voters in the 32nd, they deserve better and they deserve more respect than they are currently being given.
How would you define your record in the assembly since you've been in office since 2000?
I have established myself as a legislator who can reach across the aisle, work bipartisanly on bills and issues with my colleagues, that I've won to try to find the middle ground and be moderate on in areas. And when it is necessary, I have differed from my Democratic governor on particular issues and bills, and have stood up where I thought that my party was wrong or misguided in some of their policies that they were trying to advance. I'm not a bomb thrower. I'm one that really tries to establish civility, and particularly now, in light of what has happened the last 6 months here in Madison, really trying to reestablish that trust and that respect amongst party caucuses and members of the assembly. And early on in the finance process, I sat down with the co-chair, Representative Robin Voss, and said, that we are feeling extremely polarized and divided in this state and in the assembly, and finance has an opportunity to try to mend some of that, and how can we reach across the aisle and be respectful towards one another here on this committee and recognize the role that the minority will play and try to establish some of that trust.
And it seems like really over the last year or so that you really have stepped it up. Was there a defining moment that really energized you and to really get out there?
We have so many new freshmen in the legislature and first-term legislators that now, having 10 years of experience, you're really kind of seen as a veteran in the building and in the assembly. And so, it was time to step up. Many of my mentors have gone on to other things, and they've retired or have moved on to the Senate. And I really thought it was time, and having, to develop that leadership and exercise that within the caucus and try to mentor some of the new members that we have.
Why did you decide to run?
I have been asked to run in the past for the Senate, and I have always, my husband and I, we respectfully declined, that it was, politics is often about timing, and it was not the right time. And I was very pleased and honored and had a lot of work to do in the assembly in the role that I had there representing the 95th Assembly District. And certainly when I was sworn into my sixth term in January, I never imagined that I would find myself where I am right now. But I distinctly remember coming home Wednesday, March 9th, when the Senate was holding their conference committee and quickly rolled the vote there in a matter of 2 or 3 minutes. The Senate went to the floor and in a matter of minutes rolled back 50 years of labor peace. And I had just come off the road from being in Madison, literally off the interstate, walked into my kitchen, watched everything unfold on Wisconsin Eye. And it was with total disbelief that I did not recognize the process. I did not recognize my colleagues. And, you know, Senator Dan Kopanky was complicit in not saying one thing to try to slow this down and try to restore some decorum to the process. And it certainly stirred something in me that the 32nd deserves better than that. And I looked at my husband and I said, sometimes history finds you, and there is a moment in time when you know that you have, you need to step up and answer the call and put yourself out there for a choice that the voters will have. And as the recall talk, you know, grew and developed and the movement, you know, continued with over 23,000 signatures being collected by hundreds of grassroots volunteers, that there certainly was an atmosphere and a mood of growing voter displeasure in the 32nd, that they wanted change, that they felt that the current state senator had turned their back on working families when they were turning to him to listen to their stories and to represent represent them in the state senate. And the phones were turned off, his office was closed down, and there was really no accessibility. And that's not how we do things in Wisconsin, that when the tough get going, the tough, you know, they don't go running. You stick around and you listen to your constituents, and you represent them. So many things that my husband and I value with our 5-year-old and our 2-year-old that we value in Wisconsin: quality education and respecting working families, treating them with fairness here in the state. And we can, the list goes on and on about the assault that we are seeing, about the things that we hold dear and we value here in Wisconsin. If it's you know, our beautiful green spaces and our natural resources here in Wisconsin, our education system, or the notion that we look out for one another in this state and we lend a helping hand to those who have caught a tough break, and we help them up. We celebrate, you know, our neighbors' successes, our community successes. But at the same time, when we have issues, when we have problems, we sit around the table, we roll up our sleeves, and we have a discussion to see how everybody can come to a solution and pull their fair share and work things out, that we don't go after those least vulnerable in our state to try to balance the budget.
Do you support the idea of recalls? And maybe in the past, what has your opinion been of recall elections?
Well, recalls certainly are very rare in this state. I think we've only had 4 of them, 2 of them being successful. And they are very hard to put forward, that there is a tremendous amount of signatures that need to be collected in a very short amount of time. I mean, it is a legal way to have, the voters can have recourse against their elected officials, but the process is there for a reason. And those folks who signed the nomination papers and who have been out there working on my behalf throughout the 32nd, that they certainly believe that what has happened merits that of a recall election, that there is growing voter remorse about what has happened, the tone and the agenda that has been pushed through Wisconsin. And we will see when this recall happens how those voters get out and they respond about really the unfortunate and polarizing, divisive tone that we have seen in Wisconsin, and ramming through very extreme agendas that I think demonstrates a gross overreach by the Republican Party.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Jennifer Schilling. She's a Democrat from La Crosse who represents the 95th Assembly District. If a recall election is declared against Senator Dan Kopanky, she has decided to run against him. The Government Accountability Board is looking at July 12th being the election day. That would come after the target for the budget being passed, which is July 1st. How much of a role will the budget play in this recall election?
Oh, I think it'll play a great role that people will be talking about that. And the things that I talk about and we're debating in Madison are the exact same things that people are talking to me and asking for my thoughts and my positions back home in the district. And certainly the budget is going to be something that will be scrutinized by the public and the media over the next 2 weeks and after that as the recalls are on the horizon here. And, you know, I've talked about the budget really one of being of misplaced priorities. We've heard the governor talk about shared sacrifice, and I know who's being asked the sacrifice. I don't necessarily see the shared part. So we will go through the next couple weeks. The Senate and the Assembly are expected to take it up next week, but certainly, you know, the notion of gutting our public schools by $800-700 million, the cutting of our technical schools that really are the engine for job creation with the training that is necessary for future employees and displaced workers, the cuts to the university system, Chancellor Gao has said would be devastating, and then the cuts to the safety net programs that are helping our seniors and our disabled and really our most vulnerable with the $500 million cut to Medicaid, that these are all going to be things that are going to be weighted against the hundreds and hundreds of tax dollars or tax credits that have been given to corporations, the giveaways that we have given away to big businesses here in Wisconsin, that we have seen privatization after privatization attempt in this budget. If it's the taxpayer-paid voucher schools in Milwaukee, to the privatizing of many of the road work, road jobs that are doing being done by our county road crews right now. The budget is riddled with bad math and broken promises where the governor had talked about not raising taxes, but indeed he raises taxes by working families by nearly $50 million, as well as just continued direct attacks on the middle class. And this is something misplaced priorities and the rhetoric simply does not match reality of what the Republicans have been boasting about the last 75 days while we've been in budget proceedings.
And I'm wondering if you could talk about the issue of collective bargaining and where that stands now and maybe how that will play a role within this race.
Sure. Well, that certainly is the reason that the senator was recalled, that those volunteers went out and collected those signatures. That is why I am here and my name is on the ballot, is what sort of generated this. But certainly this election, a very accelerated election, is going to be more than that. But certainly that was something, the issue that really started this. I think that Dan's vote and support to take away workers' rights will be seared in their memory as this plays out throughout the summer. And the court case, Judge Sumi had said that it was null and void just this week in Madison at the Capitol. The Supreme Court took up oral arguments on Monday and I think had 7 hours of testimony from both sides there. And I don't know if we have, if they have yet disclosed kind of the timeline that they're working on. But it is, that bill is null and void, but it is in limbo as far as if there will have to be measures taken to incorporate it into the state budget. And several times I asked the co-chairs of finance if they would be including collective bargaining in the finance process of the budget. I wanted it to be on record clearly if we would be doing that. Act 10, which was the bill that is in question, was not included. They did reopen up the collective bargaining debate by, in the middle of the night, slipping in proposals that would require the fire and police in Wisconsin, new hires to contribute to their health and pension costs. And then they did take away from all law enforcement the ability to bargain for design and choice of their health insurance. And so it's been cracked open again, and emotions are still raw in this state over what has happened. And the wounds exist, and we are going to have this debate. If it is included into the state budget, it will certainly, it's hot right now temperature-wise, but it's going to get a lot hotter in the Capitol, I think, as people learn about this, if it does indeed happen, and we will continue to see, you know, massive crowds that will be coming to the Capitol, and I think the Republicans fear that, the fact that we continue to be kind of on lockdown status in the Capitol with only two doors open to the public.
I'm curious what your opinion is on special interest involvement within this recall election. I know many of the union groups have gotten behind you. How much money has come in from special interests, and how big of a role are they playing within this election?
Well, it's interesting that right now, before the election was called, that there is a huge loophole in finance law. And those state senators who were the subject of recall, they had a window before the race was officially set, the election day was set, that they had a window that they could raise limitless amounts of campaign contribution here for their campaigns. And typically, the law is that maximum donation that someone can give to a Senate candidate is $1,000. And those limits, those caps were blown off the roof as I look at finance reports from those senators who received contributions of $2,500, $5,000, $10,000. Senator Kopanky received a $15,000 contribution from an executive from Oconomowoc. Senator Darling received $22,000 in contributions from a donor. It's just obscene. However, as the challenger, and I am one of the six challengers against the Republican senators, we were subject to those campaign finance limits. That, and I can tell you, you know, I don't have too many $1,000 contributors that I have been calling my friends and supporters throughout the district and in western Wisconsin and asking for, you know, very moderate campaign contributions of $100, $250 to $500 to be able to fund the campaign, get our TV ads up on air and for mail and things like that. So certainly the playing ground is not level. The playing field is not level, and there certainly continues to be a very different set of rules for the state senators than there are for the challengers. Having said that, I fully expect that there will be outside interest groups that will come in. That is one of the reasons that the Republican Party has asked for these, recruited these sham candidates for these phony races so that they can try to mobilize money from around the country to come in and be dumped into the state of Wisconsin to help prop up those senators who are in a lot of trouble right now. And so that is one of the reasons, that is a tactical decision that the Republicans have made to delay the race, the general race into August, if that's what happens, by another 30 days so that they can mobilize those groups around the country to come in and you know, get on the airwaves and smear candidates. Now, you know, there are no angels in this process, and I know that there are special interest groups on my side that will come in order to support me and will come after my opponent. And unfortunately, that is what current law allows. And we have tried to deal with finance laws here in Wisconsin about these outside interest groups and try to ask for disclosure. And the legislature has never had the courage to go after these groups to ask for disclosure. And we, as a candidate, cannot have any sort of discussion with these groups, no sort of coordination. That would be illegal. So neither myself nor the senator know what these groups are doing, but we both are cognizant that they will be coming in here, and we expect a pretty nasty tone. We saw, you know, the track record that with Senator Kopanky in the last election against Congressman Ron Kind and some of those attack ads that came in. You know, obviously there's been precedent that's been set, and the tone that I expect in this race comes from the record that I have seen on that side. So I apologize to the voters as I go out, and I tell them I apologize for the 30 days of nastiness and silliness and smear tactics that we are going to see. You know, I certainly don't approve of those measures, that I like to keep it to the issues. And in the delegation, the 10 years that I have served in the delegation, I've been the Democrat and I've had three Republican colleagues, and we have always been respectful towards one another when we're back home, that we don't go out of our way to poke a sharp stick in their eye, and we can agree to disagree and kind of check your D's and R's at the door. But this is going to, these groups and the rhetoric is going to permeate the 32nd, and it's going to leave a lot of harsh feelings, I think, after this is done. And frankly, people are going to have voter fatigue from everything that's coming in at the mailbox and on TV and on the radio. And unfortunately, they're all legal. It's part of the process. But I would just encourage voters to please talk to the candidates, ask them questions, hear it directly from us, and look at our records and our accessibility and how we have conducted ourselves while we have been in office.
And you've worked with Senator Kopanky for a number of years. How would you define his character as a lawmaker?
You know, I have worked with Senator Kopanky on several areas in the past. We've worked on improving access to dental care. We have worked on issues affecting the University of La Crosse together. But I don't see some of... I think that he is not the same Senator Kopanky who stood up to his party and had the courage to do that at one point when it came to the taxpayer bill of rights. And people have said that this is not the same Dan that we once knew. I've had many people say we once voted for him and we're not going to make that mistake again. That this is not the same guy he was when he closed his doors and closed down his office and turned off his phone when it got pretty heated here in Wisconsin. And I had constituents from throughout the 32nd coming to my office asking how they could get a message to the Senate and to Senator Kopanky about this. And, you know, this will be uncomfortable that we have worked together on issues. And I don't want to make this personal, but certainly I think that the voters in the 32nd have called for a recall of him for a reason that they believe deeply in, and that they want to express their displeasure in him turning his back on them. And he is, in as much himself, admitted that the calls to his office were running more in favor of opposing collective bargaining and to voting no on it than it was voting yes. And he went along and went with the minority and voted yes on that bill, and in a fashion that a lot of people felt very disrespected when they wanted their elected official to hear them and listen and represent them. And he did not, in fact, do that.
State Representative Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse is, so far, the lone Democrat who's running in a recall election against State Senator Dan Kopanky. The recall election is planned for July 12th, but is still subject to change. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll talk with a Republican who emerged this week and may run against Jennifer Schilling in a Democratic primary. And we'll talk with the recall target himself, GOP State Senator Dan Kopanky. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.